Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with Security Shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
All right.
Fuck. Keep that in there. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum. Ryan just hit his leg pretty hard, and he used the word F.
I use the F bomb.
He used the F word. So there you have it. Hey, dude, how was your weekend? You seem frustrated. You seem tired. You look good. But
thank
I know
you.
I know you had a thing that rhymes with jury duty.
I got nabbed for jury duty the last couple weeks, so we've had to reschedule a couple recordings. Sorry about that.
It's not your fault, man.
It's a pain in the ass.
Did they pay you for that?
No, not really.
You get paid.
Not much.
Like $20 a day?
Maybe. And they reimburse you for some miles.
Is that right?
I'll tell you all about it when it's all done, but it's not quite done.
I'm sorry to hear that.
It's all right.
But I hope you guys liked the first episode, because Ryan kicked some royal ass. I mean, you did, man. The Brandon Routh episode, great for a first week. I thought, you know, the numbers killed. We want to increase those numbers. So we do ask you, man, please. We're bringing you video. You can watch them on YouTube. You can still listen to them on all the platforms. But Ryan's hard work, it doesn't go unnoticed, especially to me. And I think the viewers are really loving it. So go on YouTube, subscribe, hit the bell so the notifications, it notifies you when to.
You're YouTubing.
Yeah, well,
you're learning.
That's the way to do it. You know, that's the way to do it. Subscribe on YouTube to catch every great moment of Inside of You on video now, which is really exciting. I'm very happy with the video. You're kicking ass. And this episode is fantastic. And you know what's great is Jess, I see her just laughing so loudly and like enjoying herself when she's like reviewing them before they go to air. And, you know, Bryce has gets a kick out of it, who does the social and really helps us out here. So I'm glad you guys like it. Please spread the word, share the video links. You know, we want to start. We want to just get going here and get some big numbers and get some advertisers and, you know, get paid, I guess. Tomorrow night is Wednesday night, and Left on Laurel, my band, we are getting back together. We don't play often, but we're getting together Wednesday at 7 p.m. tomorrow night, and we're going to play a Stage It. So go to stageit.com or wherever, and you can go on there and watch us do a little live show. It's always fun with Kent and Tom Lally and Danson and Carl McDowell from Ballers. You know, Carl, he's the bassist. So I remember you listened to the songs in the beginning, a couple of them we played for you.
Yeah, I got a big old LP.
You do
in my apartment. That I have to.
You got to frame that sucker,
gotta
man.
Frame it, yeah.
You got to frame it. You're not framing shit. So anyway, there'll be prizes tomorrow night and all that. Also, want to shout out to Patreon, all my patrons. If you love the podcast and you're going to support in other ways, and you're like, hey, I want to donate $1 a month or whatever it is, there's tiers there. You can go to Inside of You on the Patreon. You can see who the upcoming guests are, and if you're on a certain tier, ask questions for certain guests. There's extra footage, bonus eps with me and friends, Inside of Me, where you ask me questions, all on video. Merch packages for certain tiers. There's a whole bunch of stuff, and I'm having a good time with it. I randomly just start texting people, and it's like a little community, and so that's cool. So Patreon, if you feel ever so, what's the word?
Inclined.
Good word. March 31st at the North Door in Austin, Texas. I'm interviewing Zach Levi. The first show is sold out at the North Door, the 7:30 show, but there's still some tickets for the later show with me and Zach. So Zach Levi, Shazam, Chuck, all that stuff. March 31st at the North Door in Austin. I'll be leaving to Mexico this week, Ryan.
That's exciting. I'm excited for you.
Yeah, it'll be fun, man. You know, the whole thing with the coronavirus, and, you know, it's every, you know, people are trying to instill fear, and I'm just going to be careful and, you know.
Wash your hands.
Is that the key?
That's it.
Because you wash your hands, you touch your face, effed. I pick my nose. I shouldn't do that.
But I think everyone is now realizing how much we all actually touch our faces on a minute-by-minute basis. It's a lot.
Maybe I shouldn't pick my nose anymore. Maybe this will stop me
from picking my nose. I mean, I do it too, but I mean, we can't prevent it.
Oh. So Mexico, we're coming to you, La Mole, for 4 days, doing a Smallville Nights, Tom Welling and I. Also, quickly, Miami. I'll be doing a con May 9th. I'll be there for the weekend. Tom Welling and I were doing Smallville Nights in Miami, a con there. We're also doing St. Louis Wizard World on June 5th. and the Smallville Nights. If you haven't seen it, you're in for a treat. The one we just did in Richmond was off the chain, man.
You do not use that lightly either.
No, I didn't. And I just want to say one more thing. I think Ryan, I might have told you about this, but I've been to these adult summer camps. So I've always wanted one. My friends have always said, dude, this is you. They don't even think of me like, dude, you should be in a big movie. You should have your own summer camp. So I bought the rights for a summer camp that I created called Camp Rosie. And my buddy is working with me. And we are going to throw a adult summer camp an hour north of Los Angeles, or, you know, where I live. And it is going to be Halloween. So two nights, two full days, all your meals included, bedding, you're in a cabin, you got your bunk. It's a community, all your meals. We even got gluten-free stuff. It's going to be incredible. We got crazy DJs, a Friday night 80s party. We're going to have a Saturday Halloween costume party. Both are costume parties. It is the most fun you'll ever have. It really is, because I've gone 5 years in a row, but I've always wanted to do my own. So I'm breaking away and I'm doing it. So tickets will come up soon. I'm just giving you a little, you know, tweet me, Instagram me, message me, whatever. And if you're interested, let me know. It is going to be fantastic. And the prices and all that stuff will be coming up on Eventbrite soon. And if you keep listening, you'll get a discount, something off your ticket if you buy early. So Camp Rosie is coming around the corner. That's coming. That's about all I have to say. Make sure you donate. If you're going to donate any money to anything, maybe Ronald McDonald House of Los Angeles or anywhere around. They're all over the world. Food on Foot, Echoes of Hope for foster youth, Food on Foot for homeless. Great organizations helping people. And I can't thank you enough. Stick around after, because after this beautiful interview, I'm going to read some of the shout outs for Patreon, talk about a couple other things. And this guest was pretty cool. This is a good one. He got deep too, man. I love when people get deep, and he really talked about his dad.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, because he got a little emotional. You could tell there were those moments.
Yeah.
Did you zoom in on that moment?
Zoom in.
Wouldn't that be weird if you just zoomed just in, like, popped it on his eyes? Look, there's a tear. No.
Just animated some tears on him.
When people get emotional, I get a little emotional. And this guy is wonderful. We worked years ago together on a short film. He broke out and did a bunch of stuff. I went my own way. And he became a big hit on the show called Silicon Valley. Funny as hell. You know him, the bearded guy. He's brilliant. I love him. Consider him a friend. He plays football with me on occasion. Well, he played once 8 years ago. But without further ado, let's get inside of Martin Starr.
It's my point of view. You're listening to Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum.
Inside of You with Michael Rosenbaum was not recorded in front of a live studio audience.
I realize podcasting is kind of like an audio experience. You'll never know which is which.
How's everything going, man? I haven't seen you in a long time.
I wanted to say that I really wanted to. I gave you a hug at least, and that was nice. That's, you know, it's going really well. It's going better than I thought it would go.
Okay. So just life in general.
Lately.
You still got your looks.
I don't know about that. I just had some laser treatment on my precancerous spots.
I thought you were going to say something else.
Oh, my wiener?
I don't know, dude. People do laser for all the wrong reasons in this city.
Have you ever had anything lasered off your genitals?
No, but had a scary pimple once.
On your genitals?
It was not in a visible area, and I can see my entire genitals.
Was it above the, for lack of a better term, nutsack?
Nope.
It wasn't
below, between that and the that other area.
It's a soft cell song, "The Tainted Love."
You said it.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, it was.
Okay,
in the,
well, that's
in
that's
there.
Obviously not a Ziziz.
No, it
a
wasn't
Ziziz Ansari.
No, Ziziz wasn't involved. It was painful, and then it never happened again.
Could have been a boil.
I was young. No, boils last. I think
they do. I think I had a boil on my nose once. I did have a boil on my nose during the filming of the show.
You boil it off?
The guy
I'll
stuck
let myself out. I'm sure this is the end of the interview now.
Yeah, that's it. when we're getting the boils and genitals and
wait, so what happened?
Well, they just put a needle in it. It was the most painful thing. Imagine like gripping something almost to the point where it's like clay and then you're actually gripping wood. You're almost melting. You're almost going through that with your hands, the wood, because you're so much, you're bracing on for
dear life.
You broke
a chair.
Well, I was on a table, but there were these little metal levers and I remember just, it was like, okay, this is going to hurt, but through your nose.
A lot of nerves.
Have you ever had like a zit on your nose? Like right on
the worst.
The worst.
It's in that spot. Yeah, it's terrible.
And he was like going, a needle, needle, needle. And I'm just going, that face you make. I guess you're going to see my face. It was everything I took tonight.
You probably don't want to move that much. I don't know what the situation was.
With the boil removal.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a removal. It was more like, hey, let's get the inflammation down. I'll never do that again. I'd rather have a Peter Boyle on my nose and act it out.
Yeah.
Then go through that again.
What about the other Boyle? Who's that woman who's a great singer? But Susan Boyle.
Susan Boyle.
Ooh. Susan Boyle.
What happened to her?
I mean, the real question is, who was she?
What happened to her?
No,
sorry. No. It's all in how you say it.
Well, really, she was nobody. And then she became somebody. So it wasn't what happened to her.
Oh, no.
See, I guess it is what happened to her, because then she rose so fast, and then what happened to her?
Oh, she had such a good life, and then what happened to her?
What happened to
her? We ruined her.
Do we say that to each other constantly, Hollywood? It's like, what happened to Martin Starr? What do you mean? I'm on Silicon Valley. But what happened?
Not anymore. Now it's going to be what happened to...
Have they all aired yet?
Oh, yeah, we're done.
Season 6.
When are you going to air this? In the past? Because then I'll adjust accordingly. No, the season hasn't come out yet. I'm kidding.
Oh, okay. So I got to watch it.
Come and gone.
Back to the genitalia.
I'm
kidding. We're not going to go there.
Have you seen, when's the last time you saw Elizabeth Allen? That's what I was
going to
ask.
Okay, let's get into that. So you and I met on the set. I don't know what year it was.
Break it down for the visual.
Yes, we
for our viewers.
So here's what happened.
Yeah.
We met on a short called Eyeball Eddie,
mm-hmm.
and it was about a kid with a glass eye. That was your first acting performance in film, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah. I grew up out here, so I did things here and there, but that was the first thing that I got to, like, that, and then the pilot for Freaks and Geeks happened right around the same time.
We did
the pilot.
You became famous pretty quickly.
And then, everyone saw Freaks and Geeks. Everyone saw Freaks and Geeks 20 years later.
It's probably the biggest cult thing that ever happened.
Now,
it did more for your career probably
no
than
it
would have lasted.
You know what? In some ways, and I think in other ways it would have been maybe detrimental. If the only thing I had done, like if 7 years later or 8 years later, the only thing that I had done was that, it would have been much harder to break out of that.
You know what's good news is that,
if that makes sense,
you weren't a dick probably on set because Judd Apatow started casting you. So you didn't really know what Judd Apatow was going to do other than Freaks and Geeks. He hadn't really done much
He had produced a lot. I mean,
but
he'd actually been a part of a lot of great things.
Like what?
I'm
not saying he's
Ben Stiller's show. I mean, his producing resume is massive.
But I'm talking about, like, he blew up after Freaks and Geeks. I mean, knocked up all these other movies that came out.
I think it was really Knocked Up that said it. Or 40-Year-Old Virgin, right? That was first.
40-Year-Old Virgin was... Virgin?
The 40-Year-Old Version of 40-Year-Old Virgin, which comes out in 27 years. That movie, I think, really exploded his people's awareness of him.
Yeah. You were a nice guy on the set. He liked you, obviously. There was probably some people on set that were a little trouble that didn't work as much, maybe.
Oh, I was trouble.
You were a pain in the ass?
We were all trouble.
Do you think he didn't like, if
because
you had to guess,
we were kids.
But one person
we were
he didn't like. One person Apatow didn't like on that set. If you had to think about it. It wasn't James Franco.
What does that mean?
Well, because he put him in a lot of stuff, didn't he?
Yeah, but I don't know that. I also don't know that necessarily dictates the way people's working relationships work. Weirdly, I always find it confusing when you meet someone who, and I'm not going to get into a name game on this, but when you meet people who are difficult, and their careers aren't hurting because of that. Does that make sense? I think this is a business where, and perhaps any business where you're really sought after, it just kind of depends on the individual, and people will kind of take what they can business-wise and suffer the consequences in other ways.
Wow. You just said something that I really didn't think was the case.
But that still kind of happens. I think it happens less now than it used to.
Right. But if someone's difficult on set, and the director, the producer, the creator doesn't really like them, but they blow up, he's going to like, well, we have a relationship, I'm going to put him in something else, see if he does it.
Or he's valuable. The people have value in foreign markets. And if you can get a movie made because you've got somebody in it, you'd take a hit sometimes, I suppose. Those aren't decisions that I've made, so I don't really, I can't speak to it on my own behalf, but I just watch it happen.
Right. All right, before we get into some stuff, I want to go back. I want to go back before you started, because obviously you've got a great career. I mean,
hey,
you know, Party Down, that's why Silicon we're here, right? Valley, and lots of movies. That's all great. It's all, but that's not
what is the point of this podcast, by the way?
I was just going to tell you. You probably didn't listen to it. It's fine. You know, and the point really is I don't, you know, if I want to talk about your career.
Is it called Inside of You?
Inside of You, Michael Rosenbaum. At least it's right behind you. It says that.
No, it's behind you.
But I feel like if you want to talk about your career and just the things you're doing and look at me, I'm Martin Starr, and tell a quick, funny, witty story, you go on Fallon. You go on whatever.
I don't.
But if people want to go, I want to see who Martin Starr is. And I think Rosenbaum can get to the bottom of it without interrogating you and making
He's going to get inside.
You know, I think it's just, look, it's always become therapy for me. This stuff has been therapy for me, and then it becomes sort of therapy for everyone. Yeah. And hopefully you get something out of it. And I think people have a good time.
Already, it's good to reconnect with you.
I love it. And by the way, although I knew you when you were a kid. You're 10 years younger than me.
Yeah.
But I was like, I don't know how old I was. I was probably 25.
Yeah.
You were 15.
Those are incompatible ages.
Right. But now we're not that far in age. You're 38.
We've been through similar things. Like, I think at some point it just levels off, right? Like, there's the rise of growth and development and all that you're learning. And at some point you kind of get the way everything works.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all fluctuates based on how much you put into life, really.
Well, I think you have put in a lot into life.
Thanks. Cool.
It's always good to see you laugh, because many of your characters don't laugh.
Right, yeah.
They're not big laughers. They're usually like, I'm going to throw something at you and fuck you.
Well, that's what I did for the last 6 years.
You didn't, by the way.
I get to do a lot of things. I mean, Spider-Man, it's a very different character. It's
fun, quirky.
Yeah, and it's fun to do it all. What were you going to say?
Well, I was going to get back to your parents were divorced, right? When I met you?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, they divorced when I was four.
When you were four. Now, that couldn't have been it's probably something you're dealing with and you think, oh, it's fine, everything's fine. But you probably have these things that attach to you growing up that you're like, oh, my parents are divorced, my dad's not around. Now, there was a divorce, right?
They were both a big part of my life.
They were.
Yeah. My mom had custody for a short period of time. She had one full custody. Especially then, I think it was support the mother when it came to the legal matters like that. In a divorce, the mother usually gets custody, which is probably still somewhat the case. But I would imagine now they kind of look at everything, at all the details. Where then it probably should have been split custody, shared custody.
Right.
But they just were like, her lawyer went in and fought hard. And a year after she won sole custody, recognized that I needed a father, that I needed my father just to be a part of my life. And so she didn't want to, because she was fighting with him and didn't like him and they had a difficult relationship, she didn't want that to, she came to her senses in a way that was, I appreciate now so much, that it could have gone totally differently.
Well, that's incredible that your mom's, because a lot of women or men, depending on who has custody, would be like, fuck that. You're not going to be with that asshole.
She did that.
I don't care. She did that for a while.
Yeah.
But what was the turning point?
I think especially on a boy, the effects of not having your father, like you act out emotionally. I'm sure at some point she just saw that it was probably having a negative effect that she could see, that was tangible. And she made the right decision.
Do you think it was one of those moments where you're like, she was like, I can't take this anymore, because you're just like, blah, 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 and you're like, you know what? He needs to have some time with dad.
Maybe.
He's flipping out on me, and I am taking all the brunt
we
of this
a
shit.
Lot.
You did. What did you fight
but
about?
But not until I was older, I don't think. Like, when you're younger,
I think that's what happened,
you love your parents.
They're the perfect person. And then you realize, wait a minute, you're fucked too.
Yeah. Well, then they become the opposite. Then they know nothing and you know everything. And at some point you figure out.
You hope so.
It's a mix of.
Yeah, I still don't think they know anything.
Are your parents still together?
No, no. They divorced probably 17 years ago. My mom is in her third marriage. My dad just divorced for his second time. But he was in a marriage for 20.
So they were together when.
For 27 years.
When we shot Eyeballetti.
I think they got divorced.
Because that was more than 17 years ago.
They were probably married around then. And it was really hard on me because I remember my mother was calling me and saying crazy shit. You say crazy shit when you're going through a divorce and she's hurt and I get up and like, I can't live anymore. I don't want to live. And I'm like, please don't kill yourself while I'm on a show. My first show ever. I don't want to get fired when I have, it wasn't that.
This is Smallville? Was it Smallville?
No, I don't think they got, maybe it was Smallville. It was Smallville. Okay. I remember actually it was the room I was staying at, this apartment, this little studio apartment. And I remember I was starting to get a little anxiety then because it was, I mean, I'm sure you sensed it as a kid. You saw the fighting, even though they separated when you were four, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you still felt it, right?
Oh, constantly. Well, they were fighting with each other through me for a while. Because you feel that, like, they're now fighting each other, and I'm in the middle, and they tried to avoid that, but I heard them fight all the time.
What was that movie? Kramer versus Kramer. Mm. Did you feel like a Kramer versus Kramer kid?
I didn't see that movie, so I don't know.
Well, it was just a tug of war, and then, what was it? What was the other movie, Irreconcilable Differences? What was the movie where the kid divorces the parents?
Oh.
Anyway, it was a movie.
Sounds like a comedy.
But did you have that hope as a kid, like, I want them to get back together? You think did you ever think there was any hope of that? Or you're like, this is never happening?
I never thought about it because in my consciousness, I never knew them to be together. Like right. When you're 4 years old, life hasn't really formed around you yet. You're still figuring out so much. So I knew that there were changes happening, but I couldn't put my finger on it until I was much older. And at that point, I was so accustomed to them being apart that it didn't make sense for them to be together.
Yeah.
And they fought so much. Like, they didn't get along.
Were they drinking or anything like that? It wasn't had anything to do with that. They just didn't get along.
Yeah, I know my dad had a drinking problem before they were married and maybe at the beginning of their marriage. But when I knew him, he didn't. He would drink non-alcoholic beer and loved it. Just loved it.
So you never saw him lit for the most part?
No, not until I was older, and then he like would drink a little bit more, but he never drank a lot. Like he never got like fall down drunk. I never had that experience.
That's good. Did you hate seeing your mom dating guys as you were getting older, and you're like, fuck, this is not my dad. Were you just rebellious?
No, she went on a date with Bill Cartwright once, and
Cartwright from the Bulls, the basketball player.
I came up to like probably the bottom of his scrotum. Like I must have been like 9 years old.
Did you see any boils?
No. Oh, he was wearing pants. Oh, it wasn't good. Like
thank God.
I wasn't
man.
Like how was that, mom? And then he comes out. I'm just like, whoa, what are those? Hey, sir.
Whoa.
He was just in our house at some point. I know my mom went on a date with him. That was it. I knew no details other than that. I just remember thinking, oh, that's cool.
Did he say hey to you? Like, hey, man, how's it going?
Yeah, super. It hurt my neck to look up. He was very tall.
And he was nice. And were you like, when they didn't work out, you're like, what? Why couldn't you make
but
that
mom,
work out? That
would have been my awesome. Yeah, I did not. I didn't think about it in those terms. Her longest relationship was in my teens. And that went into my 20s with a guy named Frank.
Frank.
Who we all lived together at some point from like 16 to... I moved out at 17 and then like came back like when I was living there when
we did Eyeballetti.
And there was one night. Oh, my God. I can't imagine the feeling. Do you remember that group of kids? Because it was just a bunch of USC kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Elizabeth Allen led the charge. But all the producers and everyone else, they were all like pals from USC making everyone's kind of short films together, I think, as that happens, I guess, right. As you're going through film school. And I went to the party, our rap party, and I was 16, and I didn't know you don't drink different alcohols together. No one showed me the ropes. That was the first time, like, I'd had alcohol before, but I was 17, so this was like...
You're mixing beer and liquor.
It was on a new level. Yeah, was like vodka in a watermelon, and I had some of that, and then I drank some, like, whiskey with some shit in it, and then a beer, And I was just like, I can drink anything. Cut to me laying down behind it. I remember putting my head down, thinking that the carpet was very comfortable. Laid down, out. Woke up in my bed the next day. And my mom said that she watched my limp body get dragged in by the USC kids that I was working with. And they were so apologetic that they had, like, and I vomited in someone's car. Everyone told me this afterward. I don't remember a moment of it. I felt like, now I feel bad thinking back to how much that must have. They were worried I was dead, fully worried I was dead, bringing a dead body.
And because you really never drank my mother that much before then.
Not like that.
Obviously.
And I haven't gotten blacked out drunk many times in my life.
So you have blacked out after that.
Yeah, I'm blacking out right now.
I am shit-faced.
But
Frank was in your life for a little while, and did you like him for whatever for what
yeah,
it was
I think
worth?
He was a nice guy. He really tried his best. I don't think he and my mom were quite meant to work out, but he tried his best to like be helpful to me, and he saw ahead of the game. I remember he was there when Freaks and Geeks happened, and he was like, I bought the domain martinstar.com. And I was like, oh, cool. And it was like just becoming a thing, but it was like not huge yet. And now all of it has evolved. Like it's not .com. You want to get your own app. If you don't have your Martin Starr app, you know, what have you done with life? No, he got it for me as like a gift, but it was just like, he was just kind of thoughtful and business minded like that. So he had thought that would be valuable. I never ended up using it.
So Frank, do you ever talk to Frank now?
I haven't talked to him in a while, but I caught up with him once in New York.
And it was kind of nice.
Yeah, I think he lost his wife to cancer recently. I think I met with him before that happened, but I know she was sick when I saw him. He's a nice guy.
That's good. There's not a lot of people, kids, that could say that, you know, when their mom dates some guys and, you know, she goes, you know, it's not like she went through a lot of men. I'm just saying, you know, then all of a sudden you're like, you know, Frank, I'll go meet with Frank. I don't talk to him a lot, but it's nice that you had some kind of relationship.
Yeah. I
mean, drive your dad fucking crazy though.
He was there for formative years. No, my dad wasn't jealous like that. He was very thoughtful in that way.
He's still with you, right?
No, my father passed away.
When did that happen?
Just over 5 years ago.
Ugh.
He had ALS, and that was real difficult to witness, to like be a part of it in some ways.
Doesn't happen fast.
It took him a while, but for a long time, it was time spent wondering what's going on, because his body just, it didn't make sense to him anymore. He had low energy. Like the effects aren't always tangible. They're not visible. Like you don't see all the side effects. It's hard to pinpoint exactly what the problem is. And so he came out. I remember at one point he came out to LA, and this is definitely when he was being affected by ALS. But he didn't know what it was yet. And none of the doctors that he had saw could even like get into that genre of issue. They just kind of tried to deal with his energy issues. So then
just woke up, just had no energy. Yeah. I slept and I can't get through a day.
Because every day I think he felt zapped, and then it would aggravate him. So then he would spend energy angry.
And it also makes you probably anxious and get anxiety going. I'm anxious from being tired.
Yeah.
Of thinking I'm going to be too tired to accomplish the tasks or whatever.
Essentially, ALS is like your body shutting down while you're still in it.
And that was at the beginning of Silicon Valley, the success of Silicon Valley, right? When he passed?
Yeah. It was either the first year that we went to the Emmys, I didn't make it because I was with him. There's something kind of joyful because that experience meant so much to me now. And all of those people that I got to work with mean so much to me, that for my dad to kind of be there at the beginning of it, to watch that rocket take off and appreciate it, kind of makes it even that much more special to me.
Yeah.
And in particular, I see that Kumail came and did your podcast.
He was great.
My dad loved his character the most. On the show, because I think he had a pretty accurate perception of it, which was that Kumail is the heart of the show. He's that might fluctuate a bit, but he always wore his heart on his sleeve, unlike a lot of the other characters who are kind of being conniving and or who are closed off, fully closed off, like the character I played.
And your dad liked that about him. He liked that character.
Well, it was relatable. He could connect. You can connect with someone who's open like that. Right?
Yeah.
And he just really liked him and appreciated, you know, how where that comedy came from and, you know, where that character came from.
I could see you getting a little emotional. Yeah. Maybe you're wrong, but I could just see how much like you just, I could see moments that you're going through in your head of like, to kind of touch me. And I'm thinking, you know, I could just see you seeing your dad and how he reacted. I could just like, all that was going through your eyes. It's crazy. But, you know, it's nice that you, a lot of people don't have that experience of, you know, when they lose someone tragically or whatever, but you feel like he got to see your success. He got to see all these things. You have these great memories. You have that he was always a good father. He was there even though they were divorced. I mean, that's kind of that's rare, right?
Yeah. It's, I guess I don't know how rare it is because I only have my own experiences, but it's really, I don't take it for granted.
Yeah.
I feel really lucky. He was, I mean, he was very much like that. He wore his heart on his sleeve in a lot of ways and really tried to do it more and more the older he got. but he made a lot of mistakes when he was younger, too, and I think he tried to recognize those and not make them again, which is really the best thing you can hope for in a life, because we're all going to make mistakes, and some of those are pretty tough to recognize and deal with. But if you do your best not to continue that cycle once you're aware of it. I mean,
it's so hard too.
Yeah, it can be very difficult.
I mean, yeah, to me, that's, you know, whatever happened to you as a kid, you're like, oh, I'm not going to do that. Or if I wasn't loved a certain way, I'm going to love more.
And he did that. That was one of the things, actually, I think he did pretty well. Because I don't think he felt a lot of love from his parents. And he also fucked up, like he had been through a marriage before my mother, then they divorced and he got married again. And in his first marriage, I don't think he really knew how to love, and he was figuring that out and had a lot of anger issues. But by the time he had me, he had figured out what, you know, how to be a parent, at least a bit more. And his dad, I don't think, was super present and ended up leaving his family to go start a new family at some point. And just like fully left for
just abandonment
four issues. Kids. Yeah. But that was when he was, I think when he was older. So it still happened. Like you still deal with it, but you're like fully formed as a human being. And then you're like, wait a second, where did my dad go? And he's just off with a new family. He was, for me anyway, he was very present. I had a very fortunate experience with him. And I know that my half siblings from his first marriage didn't have the same experience. And there are times where I feel guilty.
Yeah.
And it pains me that we don't all kind of share the same experience and the same type of love for him.
Have they ever reached out, or do people reach out to you?
Oh, yeah, we're pretty close, yeah.
You are?
Yeah, my brother and I, while we are fairly kind of different people, and in some ways it makes it, I don't know. It's more that there's distance, you know. He lives in D.C. and I live out here, so we don't see each other too often. But he has a huge heart, and we try and stay connected as much as we can, but it makes it hard with the distance. My two sisters, Annie and Carrie, they both live up in near Portland, in Vancouver, Washington.
You visit every once in a while?
Really sweet, yeah. Carrie and I have stayed the closest. Carrie and I, she's just a fucking awesome lady. I'm like, there are those times, I'm sure you feel this way. I feel like this is part of the human experience where you look around you and you're like, wow, I'm so lucky. I'm lucky that I had a dad who, at least by the time he had me, he kind of figured it out somewhat. And I had a really good connection with him. I'm lucky that with him came a great brother and this fucking awesome sister and another sister who probably struggles and like is trying to figure her shit out. But, to have like Carrie in my life is so incredible.
That's being grateful. That's, you know, they always say the best thing you can do for your health is just be grateful, be genuinely grateful. So you saying these things, it's just like, it does make sense. I don't know how many times people have said, just wake up, say things you're grateful for before you go to sleep. Say the things you're grateful for.
Isn't it a weird thing that you'd like, people need a reminder? And maybe, and I'm sure I do too, a fair amount of times, but it is kind of an interesting thing that it doesn't come as naturally as it should.
Well, I mean, even, I wasn't going to say this cause it's, you know, this, when this airs, this will be a little time, but you know, Kobe Bryant's passing, ooh, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, it's weird because, you know, when Bowie passed, it was like, oh, David Bowie, legend, and all these other people, but you know, people were in their 60s or 70s or whatever, they've had, For some reason, maybe because I met him, I've seen him play. It was just, he's a 40-year-old guy, and his 13-year-old daughter. And the thing that hit me most is, which is true, nothing matters except connection and love. Nothing, like nothing. And people forget, my point is we just say, yeah, love everybody. And we're in the moment and everybody's Instagramming and tweeting each other, right? And they're like, it doesn't matter if you have $500 million in the bank and you have, you know, all this fame and you can live wherever you want, travel where you ever want. It doesn't mean shit.
Yeah.
I mean, none of that matters because now he's gone.
Yeah.
Right?
But it seems like the interesting thing, which I didn't realize until now, seeing all these clips of him, is that he really seemed to live a full life.
He was paying it forward.
Yes,
he really was.
He was helping so many people and present in so many people's lives in a way that was intimate and considerate and
altruistic,
not superficial.
Yeah.
What a beautiful lesson to learn.
And then his time, just we don't know. And we can always just say it when something tragic happens. Stay close to your loved ones.
Yeah.
Call your mother. Call your this. You can't live in perpetual, I love you, this is the last time.
Yeah.
But you could be more aware.
Yeah.
You could be more aware of the people you're talking to and appreciate them more. Hi, Ryan. I appreciate you. You know, I when I think of that, you know, and I think of your dad and I think of like, you know, being present and being in those moments and having those moments. And it's really, that's all we have, our moments. That's it. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter when you die and you have done all these credits. What does that mean?
Nothing.
It doesn't mean anything to you.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Thanks for getting deep with me there for a second.
Can I share two stories with you about my dad?
I'd love it.
They're just kind of two things that I think embody who he wanted to be all the time. But we're all, he was so sick when he was his sickest that his legs were as thin as my arms. And I could see when he came and picked me up at the airport, came to pick me up in a car, and he was driving. And his legs were so thin and frail that it didn't make sense to me that his body was capable of moving the car, pushing the pedal down. But he acted as if nothing was wrong, because it was really the first time I had seen him since this had really hit.
Did he acknowledge it? Did you acknowledge it?
I said, your dick probably looks massive.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And what did he say? Come on.
Oh, we laughed. No,
oh,
we laughed.
Did,
yeah, this is absolutely, he taught me the sense of humor.
Looks massive.
So his body is so frail. And in the coming months, it got worse and it became difficult to put his own clothes on and things like that. And there was a day when I think he realized that pretty soon there was no way he was really going to be able to move himself in the way that he's become accustomed. And so he got up before his wife, before my stepmom, and got in the car. She didn't know what was going on. It didn't make sense. Like, she always kind of helps him get dressed and stuff at this point. And so he just kind of snuck out, got in the car, went to Starbucks to get her coffee because she loves coffee in the morning. And he knew how much it kind of means to her. And just a simple thing, just a simple gesture of love is his motive. And he gets up and he goes to Starbucks, and they have drive-through windows out there. This is in Florida. And so he goes to the drive-through, orders. And when he gets to the window, his arms are so weak that these two giant cups of coffee, he can only move one at a time. So he like grabs one, like the guy hands him two cups of coffee and he's like, yeah, just grab the one here, put that down, and then grab the other one. The guy's like, holy shit, like what's going on with this guy? He said like the looks he got from this guy were insane. And he was like, are you all right, bud? Should you be driving? And then so he brings the coffee home, gets out of the car, sets the coffee in, and she wakes up to two cups of coffee, which he had to painstakingly go through so much effort for. And that was probably a small gesture for him to show. I mean, it was a huge gesture in some ways, but for him to just show that he probably didn't pay enough attention. And that's, you know, he expressed that to me later. But that really he was just like, there are so many times I didn't do the smallest things that if I could go back, knowing what I know now, I would have done so much more. So that's the sad. That's a sad. That's a like. I mean, it's well, it's hard. It's heartbreaking.
It's a beautiful story, but you know, it's like.
But it's a yeah.
It's like I could have done all these things, and to that in that moment, that was the hardest thing he could have done. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not,
yeah,
that was the hardest thing, and he wanted to do that to just show her some morsel of
love.
Love,
showing as much love as his body was capable in that experience.
And I think that's we're talking about. It's like when people do pass away, they did some science, they did some research about like, you know, what mistakes did you make or what would you change? I wouldn't work so much. I'd love more. I do. There are all these things that they would do. And it's always the same thing. But it's hard to make someone in the moment as a young man or whatever going through all these things going, yeah, but that's. But you should pay attention to those people because that's you in however many years. So do what you can now. And it's hard, but I think if you get in a routine of just changing what you do, and by the way, it makes you feel good. It does. There's nothing better than being grateful. There's nothing better than doing an act of kindness for someone else. There's nothing
so much more
such
rewarding.
A great feeling. Yeah. And I never knew that. I mean, I always felt like I was a good guy. But then once I started doing hands-on things, you're like, I mean, that's what it's about. That's it. That's what's going to make you feel good. It's not going to be like a residual check or a job. That is what's going to make you feel good.
Yeah. Easily one of the most rewarding things I do each year that I can make it is a charity in Kansas City.
What's that called?
It's called Big Slick. It's for the Children's Hospital, Mercy Children's Hospital, or Children's Mercy Hospital in Kansas City. And it's going to visit the hospital is easily the most rewarding hour of my year.
Well, if you ever want to go to the Ronald McDonald House with me in Los Angeles, I go every other Tuesday.
Do you?
So, yeah.
So you can love to.
Yeah, I'd love for you to go.
Yeah, I'm serious.
Yeah, I'm in. I'll text you.
Yeah.
What's the other story?
This will be a bit lighter hearted.
I like the dick joke.
And on it, yeah,
that was a good one.
That's, it's in that vein. No pun intended. So he. So it was at a point where he. Was he couldn't go all the way to the bathroom, so I became like the shit remover of his portable toilet that we had in the living room, and he would sit in the living room and chant. I was raised Buddhist, and so he would sit and chant Nam Myoho Renge Kyo to his altar in a very hushed tone, because that's all he really could get out, because his lungs, like ALS, kind of affects the body in such a severe way.
What's the chant?
Nam Myoho Renge Kyo.
Loudly.
Those are the words.
But he says it loudly. He's chanting.
He's saying it softly.
Softly.
Yeah, because he can't really get the words out of that.
Okay, okay.
When you're in a room full of people doing it,
that's when
in unison, that's when it's very
gotcha.
Like, there's a resonance to it that's powerful. And he had a very powerful voice when he would say that because he wasted so many words, he was a salesman. He was saying, this is my karma for wasting so many words that my voice is taken away. And so he was in the living room chanting, and he's like, oh, I got to take a shit. And so he moves 3 feet to get on the portable toilet. And sits there, takes a shit, and he's taking a shit. And I walked into the room, and he just looks over his shoulder at me, and he says, "This is why I don't get invited to parties anymore." And that was it. He never lost his sense of humor, which is
You can't.
Right.
You can't.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
That's great.
He was a good man.
I see that. It's obvious the way you're so passionate when you talk about him, and you know, you keep him alive with your words, man. There's no doubt about that. And your mom is, she's in your life still. She's, you guys are tight.
Yeah.
You probably got closer inadvertently almost.
we got closer. I think more than anything was just age. Like, she and I didn't, in some ways, we're just very different people. And I allowed that to be, I allowed that to stop me from putting in effort because I didn't want to get hurt sometimes. Like, we would fight and we just kind of see the world in very different ways. And that ends up causing issues that I don't deal with in any of my friendships because I tend to be drawn to people who are like-minded. And who I just get along with. And that said, you know, you always spend time with people who see different ways and those create amazing conversations. But when you're sitting around kind of enjoying life, you tend to just want to be with people you can joke around with and,
it's easy.
And have fun.
It's easy.
Yeah. And she and I don't kind of always have that connection, but we can laugh and have fun for sure. The thing that actually brought us the closest was the Los Angeles Clippers. I started going to, a lot of games, and she never really watched sports. I think she did watch sports in like college sports for her. She went to, she was a Wildcat in Kentucky
Wildcats.
No, it's like, it's the Kansas Wildcats, but it's, I don't know. I know there's, it's not KU, it's Kansas State. So it's
Kansas State Wildcats. Gotcha.
So she did like sports then ish, but I started going to Clipper games 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more. And had season tickets and went with some buddies. And then I started taking her with me.
And it was fun?
Yeah. And we just like, it was like, there's this weird pressure that she would put on our relationship that was gone when we went to the games, where usually our relationship was, so what are you doing? How's work? What's going on with you? You have a girlfriend.
And it sounded like
you're going to get married. Right. You're going to have kids. And all that shit evaporates. And mm-hmm. she's like, so what happened there? Why did they blow the whistle there? And
so then I get being to being present just a moment right here. This is our moment.
And I get to explain something to her that I know a decent amount about. I'm no expert, but I get to share with her a passion that I have and watch her grow a passion for it herself. And it like really helped connect us in a way where like now I don't have season tickets anymore, but I'm thinking about getting back into it. But it's just such a commitment.
Yeah.
42 games or whatever.
I tried to do the Rams season.
Oh,
I and then went to one just, game. And, yeah. it was,
and,
they were
and that's
playing.
Only eight games in the season.
I couldn't even
too.
Commit to that.
Yeah.
It's like, who wants these? Why am I doing this to myself?
Those you can sell, I think, for a good amount of money. You probably make your money back. So now, even though I don't have those tickets, we still just talk about basketball when I see her.
Well, I like it.
It's great.
I got to do more with that. I feel like, you know, I'm definitely getting to a place where I just don't want to fight anymore. Like you said, you don't have anything in common, really. So, but there are. I gravitate towards. Let's talk about this. I know we could talk about this.
Right.
I talk about this, and you sort of like, not to be a dick, but I want things are always on my terms or the other person's terms or our terms. Like, in other words, if it's an easy friendship, you call me when you want. I'll talk. You don't even have to talk about it. But when there's certain, I don't know, animosity, or there's things like, you know, divorced parents, and like, I have rules. You know, you're not going to talk about dad. You're not going to talk about mom. You're not going to talk about Lori, my sister. You're not going to talk about this. You want to talk to me about this? That's great. And we're not going to talk about money because Lord knows I've given you enough. And we're not going to talk about that. Let's talk about, you know, and sometimes I just do what I can. And I don't want to feel guilty. Like I'm a good son. I think I'm a great son. I think I've done a lot. But I remember in the past, I'd get really short and I'd say some shit that I was just like, what the fuck?
Afterward,
and I'd lose my my mom on the phone.
I see.
I go, you are fucking spoiled. Why are we, you know, and it would just be like, why am I doing this to myself?
And those are the habits that you created at 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. And you just hold on to that. And so you repeat that cycle.
It's not good,
but it's deep shit. Like those aren't easy things to break through.
Yeah,
so good for you for putting in the effort to try and figure that out. I go through the same thing where I know how irrational I am in certain moments, and I try to like break that down and not react the same way, because it's up to me to change it. I know at this point she's not going to change it.
Absolutely not.
And part of it I've realized more recently is having boundaries up in how I bring her into my life, as opposed to what I let her do. She can do whatever she wants. And that can't be like, you can't, having a relationship with those kind of demands it's untenable because you can't control another person. But if I just alter the amount of access that she has and bring her into the areas in which I feel comfortable.
That's it.
That's how our relationship can really thrive.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, and it's actually great. We do that in every relationship. In some, most in the good ones, those doors don't exist. So you don't think about it as much, but there are ways in which you do and don't access particular areas of your life with everyone.
Do you know what I do?
No.
Before I call my mother, I will take a deep breath. If I remember, I usually remember now. I'll just, that was a little snotty.
You getting over cold?
No.
Oh.
And I go, okay, now you're going to be pleasant. You're going to be patient.
You talk to yourself.
She's going to annoy you, but it's okay. You're going to say, I love you when you get off the phone. It's going to make her feel real good. It's going to make you feel nice. And you're going to have a conversation and see what she's up to and really, you know, because I'm always interested, like, what are you, and it always becomes about something else and what I, you know, comparing and things.
You grew
like
up here, yeah?
No, I grew up in Indiana, but I was born in New York. But so I do sort of, this is what it's going to be. It's almost like when you're about to talk to someone, like a producer or something, like, take a breath. What are you going to talk about? What do you need to get through instead of just getting on the phone and go, I kind of need to connect for a second. I just need to get my thoughts together and just go, all right, listen, she's going to bring, just ask them how they're doing, show the love, change the direction of the conversation if it gets a certain way, ask how Gordon's doing. And I care. It's not about caring. It's like, I don't want to work myself up. I'm not going to get myself worked. I almost worked myself up just saying what I just told you. Talking just now, I thought about something that's going to be. Anyway, so I get it. So you do.
So you find your peace.
I try to find my peace, and I try not. I don't want to yell anymore. I don't want to do it. You know, and I just say, you know, Mom, it's not about this all the time. Whatever I learned. Look, I'm not a fucking, you know, I talk about this, but I, you know, I went to a wellness center. I go to therapy. I do meditation. I do things. I don't know anything. All I can tell you is what works for me and is what is working for me.
Yeah.
So I have helped myself and I think helped my relationship and just become a better human being by putting the work in. So what upsets me is when someone else doesn't want to put the fucking work in. So like, hey, go see someone. Or, you know, and if they don't, then I have to go, okay, well, I'm taking care of myself. So what can I do to protect myself? Because I'm doing a lot of work here and I deserve certain, you know, whatever.
I mean, I think in familiar relationships, it's harder to kind of make demands like that. But in personal relationships, obviously you create the terms with the other person.
Yeah.
But in familiar relationships, it's a lot harder. You just kind of, you got to take what's valuable from it. This is just me speaking to myself. I'm not telling you in any way what
you
should do.
Tell me.
Tell
me.
But I'm trying to take what's, because she's, my mother is an incredible woman, incredibly strong, incredibly caring, and battling developmental stage in her life that was so difficult. Her mom was a nun who her father convinced not to go into the nunnery and give herself to God, and instead of marrying God, marry a human man who pales in comparison to God.
Which should have been Bill Cartwright.
And that's my mom later. My grandmother, her mother, married a human man who could never make her happy. She wanted a different life and gave it up for a man who I think was incredible. My grandfather was a great dude. Amazing sense of humor.
But was he God?
He wasn't God, it turns out, and that was the problem. But he just had a great sense of humor and huge heart, great man.
Yeah.
And she was, I only remember her being miserable. And that was in her older age. But I all the stories that I heard from their childhood was, that has a huge effect on you.
Huge.
Like all these things that you fight with your mother and or father about whenever you talk to them, that isn't even like who you are now. It's who you were, and you're,
it's sort of who I become too, in a way. It's always a part of you. I mean, these things that happen to you during your life, and you're, you know, and it's just, this is what happened. This is how I felt. This is what I had as a child. And you have to get to a certain age where you're like, all right, well, now I'm an adult, so I could go work on my shit, or I could just blame the fucking world.
Yeah.
So you have to at some point just go, all right, here's the reality. This is what we're doing. I am going to change the way I think. I'm going to work on myself. I'm not going to blame this. And I have people in my family and I have friends that they, you know, it's always about, well, this, my dad's a fuck up and this is this. And you just have to, and I have a relationship with my mother and my father. But again, it's on, you know, I feel like it's on my terms in a way. Like, look, if they call me, I'm just saying that I'm not going to allow them to make me feel a certain way. I'm going to walk away from something or tell them, hey, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to hang up the phone right now. I'm not comfortable. I don't like where this is going. And I'm going to call you out on your bullshit. If you say something that didn't happen, if we're talking about the past, when I know it did in my eyes and it actually happened to me, don't say it didn't. You know what I mean? So don't fuck with people's memories or the way they perceive things. That's why I try to talk about different things.
That's interesting. Those are tough things to combat.
You just want someone to go, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm not just saying your parents, just own up to it.
Yeah.
I will own up to as much as I possibly can.
I will say, just speaking for my mother,
she's owned up.
That's one of the beautiful things about our relationship is that because I've started saying, hey, look, I can't talk to you for a little while. You did something. It hurt me. I'll talk to you when I can, but I need some time. And then I'll go back and revisit. And she'll say, what's happening? Like, and it's on my terms that we're meeting. I'm not going to be forced to, I still love her. There's that gap doesn't create some sort of anger or hostility. In fact, it's me doing what you do on the phone, which is taking a breath and remembering that she's not doing any of these things on purpose. She didn't want to hurt me the way that she did. She perhaps made a selfish action.
That's it.
And the effects of which, had she known would be so severe, she probably would have made a different decision. But because in that moment, she's only thinking about herself, she's making the best decision with what she knows. And so later strong. I can say, here is what you did. This wasn't your intention, but this is the effect it had on me. It hurt me tremendously. I still love you. I want you to know that things like that make me recoil, and I will do my best to make sure that you don't have the opportunity to hurt me like that again. This doesn't change that I love you. I still love you tremendously, and I will still see you as much as I can. In that situation, you will not find me again.
That's honest, and that's also holding them accountable.
Yeah,
and holding yourself accountable for like talking up for your speaking up, not just hiding behind like that's bullshit. I'm not going to say anything about it. Fuck them. And then you have all these resent. Because I think that's what's happened to me for a long time is it just, you just get more resentful, right? You just start thinking, wow, it's like I can't even talk to some people about things because their view of what happened, and I'm not crazy or completely, but I really have a vivid memory of certain things that's so pure and so honest and so at times fucked that how could they see so far apart from me? How could they not acknowledge what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And just even if they don't see it that way. So I am fucking sorry. I am deeply sorry if you felt that way, if I was like that. I guess I wasn't aware and I was being selfish or whatever, but there's some kind of it's brave to do that. It's brave to own up to it. And sometimes you don't have to own up to it because you're right, but own up to it because you might be wrong. I think that's the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're just wrong. Maybe the way I was affected by something which really hurt me and affected me as a child, that's my truth. So just respect my truth.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty.
Yeah, anyway, back to freaks and geeks.
No, cool. Yeah, don't forget to go over my resume.
This is great. But, you know, some things happen. Like I read that, you know, after Freaks and Geeks, you were depressed because about one season, will I work again? You were talking about working in the coffee industry. What was it?
I was a barista for one day, maybe 5 hours. I made $2, not to brag. From the tip jar, someone was nice enough to say, here, take this. I was in my early 20s at this point, and I just didn't feel like I was going to work out in this business. I think I'd lost some passion for it too at that point because it sucks. Like the people that it's a business. And when you meet enough of just the business and you get fucking beat to shit by the business, you're like, wait, the thing that I love doesn't exist here anymore.
You really thought no one's going to cast you, your acting career is over.
Yeah, I did. I didn't really feel like it was a place where I could thrive anymore, that I had the kind of relationships that were valuable. Just because it's, I love working and I love meeting new people and I love new experiences like that. Spider-Man is one that was very fun. Obviously Silicon Valley, and now those have become family. And those are the experiences that I only want. That's all I'm here for. And ending up on a show where it isn't like that, or doing something that feels like business, like the only purpose that most of the people are there with is to make money. That isn't what I'm interested in. And that's what it kind of felt like was only possible. And that was shunning me. So I got really lucky. Knocked Up happened. And then my life shifted.
Do you think you're grown up enough? Maybe not the term. Do you think you're mature enough? Do you think you have had enough life hit you in the face that if something happens now where you don't work for some reason and you just stop working for a while, that you would have that level of like, I'm not going to fall apart. I'm not going to get depressed. I'm going to do what I can and figure it out.
Never. I don't think it's possible for me. I also.
What do you mean it's not impossible for you to do what?
I don't think it's possible. I don't think that's how I'm
wired.
Well, even when we would shoot Silicon Valley, and I felt confident because HBO was so, was such a proponent of the show and was so supportive and with us, I felt always good that we would come back. Season one, two, three, like once season two happened, then I was like, oh, great. We'll run as long as we want to. As long as Mike and Alec are excited about this, we're rolling. And even then at the end of every season, there's just, it's like going to a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a party for months where you like go and you see your friends and you're like, this is the best thing that's ever happened.
Then the weekend's over and you're fucked. Yeah. You feel like shit.
And it's all over.
So that's how you feel at the end of every season?
Yeah.
You get depressed.
Oh, absolutely.
Like when you talk about depression, do you talk about like it's situational depression, or is it really like if this show doesn't come back, what am I going to do?
No, it's situational. It's definitely not. It's more just like lashing out probably at the people around me and wanting to like sit at home and sulk a bit for a bit. But that's something that I think fades within a couple of weeks. And there's still kind of like a lingering, like just missing
residual effect of like, right.
Yeah, for what that was. But now, like we finished in October. I think we finished in October or November. And I haven't worked since. I've worked on a friend's show here and there.
Well, hang on. I want to let you know something. That's called Thanksgiving and the holidays. And now it's January. So yeah,
I don't have something like lined up. I'm not.
Are you freaking out?
I'm old enough now to recognize the thing that you're getting at, I think.
I'm getting at it.
Which is, and I think I'm finally in the awareness part of the cycle currently so that I can calm down. Because coming back in January after the holidays, I was like, fuck, I need a job. I need a fucking job. Like, how's that going to happen?
But don't you ever sit back and go, God, I have millions of dollars now.
I don't. Well, that we are in different situations. I don't.
Hang on.
I don't live on.
I looked up your net worth on Wikipedia.
How's that?
It just says it's probably not accurate.
It's not. It's definitely not accurate.
But you did Silicon Valley for 6 years. I mean, you're not broke. What I'm trying to say is this: you don't have to work right away if you don't want to.
That is a good thing that I have. That I now have the luxury of experiencing.
It's a great thing.
Yes, which is not
a lucky thing.
It's an unusual thing for me. Because this is the first time I've been on a show for more than 2 years. So this is the first time you get to a point where you renegotiate and I'll have something sitting there. After each season, I've been without worry to like not work in between.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? That's not a luxury that anyone has that isn't independently wealthy from their parents or something.
Right.
And so to have created that for myself is very fortunate. And I'm just enjoying this
good
for what it is.
How hard are you on yourself? Do you get anxiety? Are you a quick learner I always ask this to people. Are you a quick learner with your lines? Are you someone who stresses about performance? Was I good enough? Or do you let things go? Do you watch yourself? A lot of questions here, but overall, it's that feeling of just, are you really confident about things? Or are you just as insecure as anybody else?
It depends. On Silicon Valley, it was real difficult to learn the monologues that I
had. Oh, man. Yeah, those lines. IT shit.
Because it's all foreign. It's speaking French.
Yeah, like lines like, I like the sound of you chortling on my ball sack.
No, that one's easy. Got that.
That was easy. Yeah. Or maybe spoken by a 280-pound pile of shit. Is that hard to memorize?
Oh, no, that one I get. I didn't know you weighed that much. I just jokes.
They're jokes in the show.
It was... No, yeah, I know. The ones that are difficult are like all the tech mumbo jumbo jargon, which especially this last season. And there was one week where I worked like usually, and maybe you've had different experiences, but I can't say in this business I've really worked much, because most of the time it's very plush. It's, you know, the worst it gets is the crunch of doing an independent movie where you have no money, no budget, and you're trying to get a day. You're trying to get your 8, 9, 10 pages in a day.
Well, that's the hardest.
We don't have time for 2 or 3 takes.
Martin Warner.
We got it. We have to, we don't have time for this because we need 3 or 4 takes for something else later today that's more important. And that's, it's all like scheduling stuff. But this, there was one week that we were, our schedule was manipulated because of Kumail had other obligations, and so his schedule was shifted, and that shifted our entire schedule. And so there's one day I was on 3.5 hours of sleep, and that was the day that I had the biggest fucking monologue of this season, and I just had so much trouble.
Were you terrified?
I just felt bad. I just felt unprofessional.
Were they upset with you?
No one was upset. No,
that's usually the case. If you're mostly professional, but in our heads, we're
it was my brain couldn't function. They say that you shouldn't drive if you've had less than 5 hours sleep, 4 hours sleep, because it's the equivalent of being drunk, and your brain just isn't firing on all cylinders.
Right.
And they were fortunate. I was fortunate. They sent a car, so I didn't drive that day, but I had to do other things that I couldn't do drunk. And this was one of them, was say a page and a half. It was 3 pages, I think, total, with little bits that other people were doing in between. But there were massive, massive, incoherent monologues.
Were you getting anxiety? Were you getting a little tingly feeling like, oh, my God, I'm fucking up?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Like nervous. Yeah. Like, this sucks. I'm not an actor. I'm not good. I'm going to get fired. This is why I shouldn't act. Just get me through the scene. I'm done. Because that's what goes through my fucking mind.
I made those jokes. I didn't feel, I mean, this is our final season, so I wasn't like, I'm going to get
fired.
Martin. Yeah. But I made those jokes because that makes me feel more comfortable. But it was more. I just kind of felt,
we've all been there,
just guilty
loads
of
times.
I just felt like,
I honestly,
like, here I am fucking living. Yeah, whatever,
dude. I honestly said this to a director because he was asking me to
like,
do something.
These are the hardest things that happened in my life. Like, I'm living a pretty
but they are terrifying. It is terrifying. Yeah. I have asked the director, I go, listen, man, I'm thinking about getting an earwig.
Yeah,
I'd like to, because you don't see it. I know Robert Downey Jr. wears one, and I'd love to just have one and someone just throw the lines at me so I never have to worry about lines, because lines always fucking scare the shit out of me.
What'd they say?
I do it. Like, yeah, I don't give a shit as long as distract everybody else. I'm like, how about, cue cards? I mean, look, I'm just saying, to make it easier when it's those big days.
Yeah.
Where it's like, you know, if you have a big monologue, I could do it twice if you just fucking, you know, if I don't have to fucking... Or you could be a professional. I don't have the gift like certain actresses actors who've been on here. Kristen Bell. There's certain actors who go, oh yeah,
she's
learn it in the fucking. I know you worked with her. I could learn it in the trailer. I'm like, I can't. Fuck
she's
you.
The sweetest. I mean, her brain.
It's genius.
Is far more gifted than mine. But I think also it helps how much she does those kinds of things. Like, those exercises just build that muscle.
The more you do it,
and she's constantly working. She's constantly doing everything that she can, and she does music too, so she's like learning new songs and just kind of
she just doesn't stop. And you know what's funny,
she has a motor that
I don't envy her. I love her.
Yes.
And I think she's one of the most,
I don't envy that schedule,
philanthropic,
for sure,
genius, great mom, all that. I'm throwing every compliment at her. All I'm saying is I never want to work that much. I don't know how someone I don't get it. For me,
I'm not envy. Yeah, I agree with you. But her talent, I wish I could sing so badly. It would be the coolest thing to be able to sing.
Look, if I could sing, I have an album out. You could sing.
Uh-huh.
Hey, for freaks and geeks,
I heard this. You might deny it. Mm. That you bulked up for Freaks and Geeks for something. And the producer said no. So then you had, at the gym locker scenes, you wore a robe.
I had to wear a robe, yeah.
Were you upset about it?
No, I don't care. Franco and I were working out at the gym on the lot. Which, what was the lot that we were at? It's right across from Paramount. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I don't think so.
It's been there for so long. I forget the name of it at the moment.
Anyway, you're working out with Franco.
Franco and I were working out at the gym. It was a bad idea. I shouldn't have been working out. It wasn't it certainly wasn't professional.
Why wasn't it professional?
Oh, because it wasn't in character.
I mean, yeah, you're a little.
I was preparing for my personal life when I was going to have to do things for work.
I'm getting in shape. What's wrong with that? You're telling me I can't get in shape? How dare you, Paramount?
No. They weren't.
Okay. I got you.
It was Judd. I mean, it was Judd and Paul. I think they were just kind of.
Did they come to your trailer? Hey, Martin.
If I remember correctly, they just made fun of me when it happened.
Really? They weren't like, hey, drop down to 15s.
No. And I wore the. So there's another episode where I'm the bionic woman. And I have a bra on, and there was part of it which I think they cut out fully, where I'm shirtless,
and I
put all those things on, the bra and everything on, and instead of ever showing me shirtless, it's just me in the bra, I think. So it starts there, so that you can't see as much of me being in any sort of shape, and that helped mitigate my muscles.
Did that bother you?
No, I had nothing to. I still was a virgin for long after that.
Really?
Yeah.
When were you not a virgin? What year? What year? And how old were you?
2012. No.
Well, I mean,
it was. It was the spring of. yeah. 1990. Oh no! It was 2002. I guess it must have been
2002.
2004.
So you were 22.
22.
22 years old.
I'd been with my girlfriend for 2 months.
Was it a good experience?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
And then you got used to it.
I was in love. At some point I was like, it didn't happen yet. I want to make sure that it's meaningful. And so I waited for it to be meaningful. And I was with my girlfriend of a few months and we ended up being together for a year. And then it didn't kind of feel right. There was something and so we ended up breaking up. But, yeah, it all worked out.
Did you use a condom at 22 for the first time?
I did. Not. I think she was on
the control.
She was controlling her
cruise
body. Yes.
Right.
If I remember correctly. But you know what? I actually we might have it first.
Okay.
First little bit. Yeah.
A little rub.
Anyway, yeah, what kind of details do you I didn't know this was that kind of podcast.
What else do you want to know about you, huh? This is fun. So look, everything started happening and we, you know, obviously this is, you know, the part of the conversation where it doesn't mean anything.
Oh,
no,
great.
It does. Of course, yeah, it does. But you went to Knocked Up. Judd started using you for things. He didn't use everybody. There's like some of the actors in that he never used again and I've never seen, right?
Yeah, I guess that, I mean, that because it wasn't everyone from Undeclared and it wasn't everyone from Freaks and Geeks that did Knocked Up. It was kind of like our group of friends and I guess Jonah was in there. Yeah, it was just kind of like our little group of friends all came together to be Seth's friends in that movie, and it all felt natural. And
do you still, are you close with Judd? Could you call him up right now and go, hey, it's been a while.
I bet if I did call him up, he would answer and we could like grab lunch or something. But I guess I just have never thought to. I like him. I mean, whenever I see him, and I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity that he's given me.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
And how much care he gave to making the set that, especially Freaks and Geeks, was kind of conducive to our growth too, like protecting us. And that was, he really put everything into making it the best environment for us as young people.
Maybe you just, you get lunch and he goes, oh yeah, Martin, of course. I love Martin. He's so talented. I'll put him in the next thing. Just a reminder. I'm Martin. Here I am.
I don't have relationships like that.
You don't care about that.
I don't think that wouldn't be my motivation for.
Well, of course not motivation, but it's like, hey, he's a friend. I worked on movies with him. I want to see him. And a little reminder that I'm still.
There are times where I want to be more like that, like more minded.
Opportunistic is the bad word. That'd be the bad word of it, but that's not what I'm saying.
But that's not a bad word. It depends on the opportunity.
There's ulterior motives. If you like someone, you're like, whatever. Hey, I remember I called a friend who's doing a movie, and I was just like, hey, how's it going? Is there anything in that for your buddy, Rosie? I don't give a shit. Yeah. It's a friend. If I have a connection, why wouldn't I use it?
And it's up to him how he takes that energy. But and I mean, I hear stories too here and there of people who are in Judd's world who are incredibly talented and they should work nonstop. And for whatever reason, they don't. And they have the same bluntness with their words. And it ends up working out that they get to be in things that they should be in anyway.
Right.
So I see nothing wrong with that. It just isn't a world in which I feel it's not a way in which I feel comfortable operating.
And when James and Seth, do you still talk to those guys?
I just saw Seth a week ago. We did. He has a pottery. He has three pottery wheels at his place. And
what?
I went over and did pottery with
him. Done pottery. That seems pretty cool.
I've done it. I did it a few times.
The soothing.
It's the best.
Does it really take your mind off life for a minute?
It's meditative. It's great doing something with your hands. You know what else I did, which is incredible, and I really enjoyed it? I got very into kitchen knives.
Like Japanese kitchen knives?
All kinds of kitchen knives.
Japanese make the best?
German steel is meant to be one of the best. Japanese knives are rather incredible, but I think those are almost infamous because of sushi.
Do you have a lot of these knives at home?
I've got a lot of knives.
If you had one set of knives to say, hey, you should get this, if you want a really good set of steak knives and all around a good set of knives, what set is that?
I made my own kitchen knife.
Come on. Star knives?
I don't think that'll be a thing. Maybe it will. But I have thought about getting, like, if I'm not working, going and focusing on something like Seth is making at his house. There's a giant table full of all the pottery that they've made, him and his wife, Lauren. And then outside is a ton more work that's in progress. And then in their garage is just everywhere, things like mid-process. And it's so much more than you could, like nobody needs more than a few ashtrays. How many rooms do you have in your house? And he easily has like 50 ashtrays. And I'm sure he's got plans to do something with them. But that I'm just like kitchen knives I could make for a while. But then what am I going to start doing? Like at some point, I'm going to have more kitchen knives than I'll ever use right. in my lifetime. Then they just become gifts. And I start giving, hey, good to see you, Mike. I brought you this knife.
Great.
As a thank you for having me on your podcast. Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
But I like this. I like the pottery stuff because I like the knives.
Very fun.
Because what do we do, Ryan, on Friday night? I have people come over and what do we do?
Art night.
Fart night.
I'm terrible. Well, that too.
All right.
But I'm terrible at that. But you're present, you're focused, you're just like enjoying things. You don't have to be great.
Is it paint? Is it specific art? Is it painting?
Watercolors, what?
No, you just sort of bring a thing and you just draw whatever's
pastels.
Whatever's in your heart.
Yeah. Sometimes those like themes, like if you want to, but it doesn't matter. Some people go like, I don't want to do that theme because I'm not an artist. That's one thing. It's one thing where when I do it, I can just go, I don't have to be great at it. I don't have to be good. I'm just going to do it and get lost in it. And that really helps my mind.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me a little peace. And so I started having art nights probably about 6 months ago. I'm the least talented out of everybody. And again, that's not what it's about.
If I made it out, you would have a new bottom.
Well, I hope so.
You got it.
Maybe you can do the KC emblem on a...
No, there's actually a dinosaur fucking a robot that I'm working on painting right now.
Dinosaur fucking a robot.
So I'll bring that over and work on it.
Is that true?
Yeah, my buddy painted it on my wall. I needed a real pick-me-up. I forget why I was depressed, but he came over to cheer me up, and he painted a dinosaur fucking a robot on my wall.
Did it cheer you up?
And it made me so happy. And so now I'm painting it on a toolbox for him, a woodworking toolbox.
I think that should be a TV show, like on Spike TV or something, a dinosaur fucking a robot.
Dinobots. I feel like it is. That was the show.
Was that a show? But they weren't fucking robots.
No. Well, you got a point.
How do you get a Dinobot, though?
Oh.
My man.
All right. This is from patrons. I have this Patreon thing, and these are from patrons asking questions for you. Quick, laser-like. It's called Shit Talking with Rosenbaum.
Okay. Do you charge them to ask you questions?
No.
Isn't that how Patreon works?
No, they just join if they want to, if they want to be help, you know, towards the podcast. They like it. They want some behind-the-scenes footage. They want, like, Q&As, special things that only they get. So they can do whatever they want. You don't have to join it, but they join it and they love it. People love it. It's really cool. So Shit Talking with Rosenbaum, here it is. Who's your favorite Muppet?
Who's the guy with the long nose?
Pinocchio?
No, the blue.
That's Gonzo.
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 That's it.
Gonzo.
Yeah. That's it.
That's a good one.
That's my
remember
guy.
How Gonzo talked? Hey there. I don't remember. I'm not going to do it. Sophie M., do you have any great stories from the set of Roswell?
Oh, that's where, you know what? No.
Great.
I probably do. It just takes too much to dredge them out.
A better question is, quickly, yes or no, do you believe in extraterrestrials?
Yeah. I mean, we're not the only life form in the universe.
Do you think they're walking around amidst all of
that? I don't know.
Okay. You don't have to answer that right now.
They've probably made some sort of contact with our planet. I don't know what that means. I can't.
Roswell. Hello.
Okay. I mean, that if I had that level of clearance, I would immediately go to Roswell just to know what's going on.
Jason D., which actor would make you laugh the most in the set of Knocked Up?
Jay and I would, Jay Baruchel and I would drive to work together on many occasions, and we just had a hoot. We had a real hoot because he didn't have a car out here. And he's from Montreal, and he just also didn't like driving. So I'd pick him up, and we'd drive to work together on occasion.
It's nice of you. Jerry W. recently watched Intruders.
Oh, yeah.
Which we enjoyed. What was it like to play such an intense character?
Fun. A good departure from the other stuff that I do. I like playing a killer.
I think you can do that pretty well.
It was, I enjoyed it, yeah.
I could see it in your eyes.
Set right in.
You want to, you're great at playing nerds or assholes or this, but when you get to play a little bit deeper and do your shit.
Yeah, I definitely have that. I feel like because what I learned initially was improv, it taught me to act kind of inside out and really just find something, like tap into parts of myself that feel authentic and natural to whatever it is. And there, we all have all of those things. And I think it helped me just maintain contact with those so I can use them if I need them. And that was really fun to just be a real piece of shit who is a real piece of shit.
Andrew C., how jealous are you of Kumail's, I said that right, Kumail?
Yeah, Kumail.
Kumail? Kumail Nanjiani's abs, be honest, this is a safe space.
Yeah, I mean, I'd take some abs if you're handing them out.
Good body.
Yeah, he's put a lot of work into his body, and it's paid off.
Lucas, I'm gluten-free. I'm dairy-free.
He was doing the paleo?
Paleo.
Is it paleo?
I don't know. Kinesio?
Keto. He was doing the keto diet, which initially I think he put on a fair amount of weight and muscle, and then keto just rips all the fat off because you start using fat as an energy source. And you're not eating carbs, you're just eating proteins and fats and things. And so the energy that your body consumes isn't calories in the same, it's not carbs anymore. We all use carbs for energy.
You really learned about
this.
You
start using fat for energy, like your body shifts.
So it's probably eating late in the morning, don't eat right away.
And then I think he also does that.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Lucas Sam, are you as cynical and complex as your character's persona in Silicon Valley?
Cynical, yeah, for sure. We all got that, right?
Yeah, but you're not as much as a dick.
You know what I realized when because we would do a lot of Q&As for Silicon Valley, and I realized...
You become that character?
No, well, when I was myself, the audience didn't respond as well. So then if I would just turn that up, that part of the dial up a little bit, they loved it.
Rating the audience.
Yeah, just like, I was like, oh, wait, you don't want me. You want us all to like come up here and be our characters. And I'm like, fuck it.
Yeah, they don't get that.
Fuck it. I'd rather get a laugh and enjoy this experience than like share some part of my soul with strangers who don't really care.
Matthew J., what are your favorite Guilfoyle invoked joke from Silicon Valley if you had to pick? My favorite has to be the let Blaine die chart.
Oh, that is a good one. I think the dick joke goes down all time as one of the most fun ones.
What was it again?
We're all just fucking, like, how fast could you jerk off a whole room full of dudes? And then Kumail and I actually went and presented at like the Smart People Awards. I forget what it was actually called, but it was like geniuses, like actual scientific geniuses.
Yes,
yeah. Like just people who were changing the planet, changing the way that we live here. And we were giving an award. We were like going up and we were going over our speech, or like our back and forth, Kumail and I, on our way up on the flight to San Francisco. And we're like, let's just scrap all this and we'll improvise a thing where we do the dick joke. But like in this room, how long would it take for us to jack off everyone in this room? It didn't go over very well, but it was so fun to watch that joke bomb. it was so rewarding.
You didn't get nervous at all?
Yeah, not really. Like, once you're up there, no one else is funny. You're at a smart people convention.
You just went, okay, bud.
The emphasis isn't humor.
Right.
So it makes sense that it also makes sense that it bombed.
Lisa, last three questions. Favorite memory from Freaks and Geeks set?
There's just too many. I mean,
who's your favorite? Like, the one person you just gravitated towards. It's like, I just want to be around this guy.
John and I are close. Seth and I ended up living together after the show was done, and we were very close. Jason and I were close for a bit, and now it's been so long. I think Linda is easily the person that everyone just kind of gravitates
towards. She's amazing. I love Linda.
She just has such a huge heart.
Uh-huh.
She always felt like an older sister in such an incredible, comforting, sweet, caring way. She's great.
Angelina G, what direction do you think or would have liked to see Freaks and Geeks go? Had it been able to continue? And that's hard.
So this is a question from Angelina Jolie.
Angelina G.
Wow.
Lee.
Wow. Well, Angie.
I mean, that's a hard one. Let's.
Well, they had already talked about it. So why don't you go look that up, Angie?
Yeah,
do
Angie.
Your research.
Come on, Angelina G. Lee.
They talked about me being a sports guy, like going into the Geek Squad separating because I was working out, like actually working out behind the scenes. They were like, "Oh, we'll put him into like he'll become an athlete and like not get why he's now disconnected from his geek buddies, like why they've turned on him, and he'll be accepted into the jock group, and it'll like just I think that was the shift that they were going to make." Season two or three.
That could have been fun, and you could have worked out.
It would have been crazy.
Right?
It really would have been a weird turn, too, because I think in some ways that character, Bill, was a heart, like such a deeply heartfelt part of the geek stories. So to like lose that, like it changes such a huge dynamic. I don't know how you would really do that and keep
the I think you could because you have these guys like you're like they're on the side sort of like going... Can't believe it. Like, does he even know who he is? He's going to come back begging us to be our friend again. I mean, what is he doing? These people don't care about him. They don't. It's that whole dynamic, you know. I think that's what it would have been. And then all of a sudden, one day you wake up and season three, now you're back with the geeks.
Yeah, I really missed you guys. What happened while I was gone?
I don't know. You got big and stupid. last one, Mary B. What kind of advice do you have for the actual freaks and geeks of the world?
Just be true to you. And the world will catch up.
Yeah. And especially nowadays, I think geeks and they're cooler than, you know,
you got it. But it's also like you're raw. Like the things that make you a geek are the things that make you great.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
Well, dude, this has been fantastic. It was deep. I hope you had fun. Did you have fun?
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
It was great catching up with you.
It was, man. Last time we hung out, I think you played football with us.
Yeah, I came out and you had like actual like college football guys who dominated.
But you played well.
I did not.
But you can play football. You're athletic.
Yeah, I could throw the ball a little bit, but everyone there was like real athletes. Like, oh, we played A1 something. Whatever A1 refers to, I don't know. But
did you get hurt?
No.
Did you have fun?
Yeah, yeah.
Were they nice?
Everyone was very nice, yeah.
What's your Instagram handle, all that jazz?
No, it's just my name.
Just Martin Starr with two R's.
Yep.
Right? Martin Starr. What's at yours? Martin Starr.
I mean, as long as we're talking.
Well, mine's Michael Rosenbaum. I think everybody knows it. Hey, man, thank you for allowing me to be inside you. This was a real treat. Yeah. I really had fun. I'm glad you came in.
You ended all like that, huh? Thanks for letting me be inside you.
Usually.
Yeah, that's your big ending.
That was a throwaway that time, though.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
I
wasn't going to let you throw that one away.
Yeah. But listen, I want you to come to the Ronald McDonald House with me sometime.
I absolutely will.
And I want to hang out with you again.
I love seeing you. The microphones as soon as we were done, I thought about it.
Good. I'm glad. Thanks for being so honest because people out there, you wouldn't think it, but you've probably helped someone out there. Just the relationship with your family and losing your father and all these things that make us human and we have to deal with in life. And it really, it's nice to see you just open up and tell your story. So thanks.
Absolutely.
All right, man.
Thank you.
Martin's just a good guy. He was open. He just talked about things. And I always, you know, sometimes, most of the time I feel pretty comfortable, but he made me feel really comfortable. There's times where you feel like you just ask someone anything. Because I really think he knew the show, whereas, like, maybe he didn't listen to it all the time or even listen to it, but he knows that it's helping people. And they know that, you know, people are getting something out of it. So if he shares a story, somebody out there is listening going,
I can relate to that. And that's what it's all about. Yeah. Have your parents listened to it?
They have.
They hated it.
No, they just
Jesus Christ, you're laughing.
No, because the one I told them to listen to because I really liked it was the Joe Latrulio one. But I forgot for the first 10 minutes you talked about colonoscopies and shitting yourself.
What are you telling me to watch this? Listen to this, Ryan. So they didn't like it.
No, they enjoy it.
They but you don't have to lie to me. No. You can tell me the truth.
They didn't enjoy the shit part.
They were the shitting?
The shitting.
They were turned off by that.
My mom has a mug. I gave it. She has that at work. The one that says.
Daddy mug?
Yeah.
Great. We got tons of shirts and mugs left. We got left on Laurel shit here.
Yeah.
Big shout out to my patrons. Here we go. You know who you are. I love these guys. And by the way, if you join Patreon, it's helping the show. It's like whatever it is, a little something. And people always say, I'm sorry, I can only give $5 or a dollar. Well, just you guys subscribing on YouTube and on the platform, just subscribing to the show is enough. This is just icing that just sort of, you know, helps because we're not like, we're growing. We're growing.
Yeah.
So here are the patrons. Top tier patrons. Allison, Andrew, Angelina, Barry, Bob. We didn't have a last name for one of those Bobs. Bob and Bob. Bortex. Chris, Dion, Emily and Emily. Jason, Jerry, Jill, Trisha, Yukiko. Kevin, Kristen, Lauren, Lee, Mark, Michael, Nancy, Nico, Raj, Robert, Samantha, Sarah, Scott, Sean, Tiana. Thank you guys. I mean, top tiers. I mean, you're I don't know what to say. Sometimes I just text you and say, thank you so much. Oh my God, you're so kind. And like, of course, we love it. Again, if you love the podcast, subscribe on YouTube and subscribe on all the platforms. If you want to listen on the way to work, it really helps. Hit that notification bell so you're notified. Spread the word. And that's it. Tomorrow night. Stage it with me and the boys left on Laurel. I'll go to stage at 7 p.m. I'll be in Mexico this weekend. And remember, Austin, Texas, March 31st. I'm interviewing Zach Levi at the North Door. First show sold out, but there's still tickets for the second one. Check out my Twitter, Instagram. You'll find it. Also, Zach posted it. It's going to be fantastic. You know, Camp Rosie's around the corner, so look for that. I'm going to read a little fan letter because I always like to read fan letters. This is from Chris from Orlando. Michael, I admit I'm late to the party. I didn't know you even had a podcast until Stephen Amell tweeted about his recent experience with having to return to finish an episode with you. Being a huge fan of Arrow and Smallville, I figured there was no way I'd be disappointed. After listening to two episodes, I was hooked. You're by far my favorite talk show host. Am I a talk show host now?
You are.
Well, how about an actor, writer, and podcast guy?
This is a talk show, and you are the host of it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I don't know how you crack the code. I can only assume the lack of cameras and your demeanor bring out the vulnerability in people. Although, Chris, now we have cameras, but we're still getting people to open up. I'm now listening to everything from the beginning. You're making people I've never thought twice about into compelling and complex individuals that I'm eager to learn about. Thank you for showing what podcasts really can be if they are given the proper care and respect. Keep up the great work. You've got another dedicated fan that will happily spread the word, Chris, Orlando, Florida. That's awesome. That is really awesome. You know, I think that's really nice to hear when people are like, and then they listen and they're like, you know, I like, and they just support it and you're doing something right. I definitely feel like I'm doing something right. I mean, we're doing something right here, Ryan.
I think so.
We're not trying to just be funny. We're not trying to be, we're just talking to people.
Yeah. Not hurting anyone.
No, I don't think we're hurting anyone. I mean, some interviews, I'm sure I hurt people's ears. Guys, I can't thank you enough for your loyalty. Ryan, mm-hmm. Ryan's working very hard in the video. He's getting it down. Give him some love. Show up. Even say, Ryan, great job on the editing. Or, Ryan, you made a mistake. He'll love that.
Oh, that's my favorite.
He'll love hearing that. Thank you so much for allowing me to be inside of each and every one of you. Until next week, if you're not inside, you're outside.
Jesus.
I just wanted to say something stupid. All right, guys, we'll see you.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.